A stolen donkey, easily pulling away from Nobby's inexpert tether, had wandered off in search of food. She vaguely associated this with the doorway to her stable, and therefore with doorways in general, and so had wandered through the nearest open one. There had been some narrow spiral stairs inside, but her stall was pretty narrow and steps didn't worry a donkey that was used to the streets of Al-Khali. It was only a disappointment when the steps came to an end and there was still no hay.
"Oh, no," said someone behind Colon. "There's a donkey up in the minaret again."
There were groans all round.
"What's wrong with that? What goes up must come down," said Colon. "You don't know," said one of his dining companions. "You don't have minarets in Ur?"
Said Colon.
"We have plenty of donkeys," said Lord Vetinari.
There was general laughter, most of it directed at Colon. One of the men pointed to the dim interior of the minaret.
"Look, see? A very narrow winding staircase," said the patrician. "So, there's nowhere to turn at the top, right? Oh, any fool can get a donkey up a minaret. But have you ever tried getting an animal to go backwards down a narrow staircase in the dark? Can't be done."
"There's something about a rising staircase," said someone else. "It attracts donkeys. They think there's something at the top."
"We had to push the last one off, didn't we?" said one of the guards.
"Right. It splashed," said his comrade in arms.
"No one is pushing Valerie off of anything," snarled Betty. "Any one of you tries anything like that, and so help me, you'll feel the wrong end of..."
He stopped, and a wide, horrible grin appeared behind the veil.
"I mean, I'll give you a great big soppy kiss."
Several men at the back of the crowd took to their heels.
"There's no need to get nasty," said the guard.
"I mean it," said Betty, advancing.
The cowering guard cringed.
"Can't you do anything with her, sirs?"
"Us?" said Lord Vetinari. "'Fraid not."
"Oh, dear. It's going to be like that business in Jellababy all over again. Ow."
"Oh, dear,"
said Colon, mugging loyally. The crowd, or at least that part that thought itself sufficiently far away from Betty, started to grin. This was street theatre.
"I don't know if they ever got that man down off the flagpole," Vetinari went on.
"Oh, most of him they did," said Colon.
Tell you what, said the guard hurriedly. "Suppose we get a rope round it."
"Her," Betty growled.
"Her, right. And then you'd need at least three men up there, and there ain't no room."
"Sir, I've got an idea," whispered one of the guards.
"I should make it quick," said Colon, "because there's no stopping Betty once she gets going."
The guards held a whispered argument.
"We'd get into trouble if we do that. You know all that stuff we were told about the war effort? That's why they were all confiscated."
"No one will miss it for 5 minutes."
"Yeah, but you want to tell the prince we lost one?"
"All right, but do you want to explain to her?"
They both looked at Betty.
"And they're easy to steer, after all," one whispered.
"Valerie," said Sergeant Colon.
"There is a problem?" Betty demanded.
No, it's a fine name for a donkey, Nob, Betty.
"No one is to do anything," said one of the guards. "We will return."
"What was that all about?"
said Colon, watching them go.
"Oh, they've probably gone to get a carpet," said someone.
"Very nice, but I don't see how that'd help," said Betty. "A flying one."
"Oh, right," said Colon. "They've got one of those up at the university."
"Ur has a university?"
"Oh, indeed," said the patrician. "How do you think that Al learned what a donkey looks like?" Once again, laughter dispelled doubt. Colon grinned uncertainly.
"I'm really getting good at this stupid idiot stuff, aren't I?" he said. "It just sort of happens."
"Marvellous," said Lord Vetinari. There was another angry braying from far above.
"Trouble is, they're all locked up because of the war effort," said someone behind them.
A piece of mud brick shattered on the ground nearby.
"The way it's thrashing around up there, it's going to fall off anyway."
"Perhaps I should persuade her to come down," said the patrician.
"Can't be done, Effendi. You can't get past on the stairs. You can't turn it round and it won't come down backwards."
"I shall consider the situation," said the patrician.
He ambled back into the tavern for a moment and returned. They saw him enter the door, and then they heard him climbing the staircase.
"Should be good," said a man behind Colon.
After a while, the braying stopped,
Can't turn round, see? Far too narrow, said the elevated donkey expert. Can't turn round, won't go backwards, well-known fact.
There's always a know-all, right, Betty? Said Colon.
Yeah, always.
The tower was full of silence. Several members of the crowd found their attention drawn to it.
I mean, if you could get three or four men up the stairs, which you can't, you could sort of move it a leg at a time if you didn't mind being kicked and bitten to death.
All right, back away from the tower, will you?
The guards were back. One of them was carrying a rolled-up carpet.
All right, give us room.
I can hear hooves, said someone.
Oh, yeah, like our friend in the fezzes getting the donkey down the stairs.
Hang on, I can hear them too, said Colon.
Now all eyes stared at the door. Lord Veterinari emerged, holding a length of rope. The voice behind Colon said,
All right, it's just a bit of rope. He was probably banging a couple of coconut shells together.
You mean ones that he found in the minaret?
He had them with him, obviously.
You mean he carries coconut shells around?
You can't turn a donkey round it.
All right, that's a fake donkey head.
It's moving its ears.
On a string. All right, it's a donkey. Okay.
But it's not the same donkey. It's one he had in a hidden pocket.
Well, no need to look at me like that. I've seen them do it with doves.
Then even the unbeliever fell silent.
Donkey, minaret, said Lord Veterinari. Minaret, donkey.
Just like that, said a guard.
How did you do it?
It was a trick, right?
Of course it was a trick, said Lord Veterinari. I knew it was just a trick.
That's right. It was just a trick, said Lord Veterinari.
So, how did you do it, then?
You mean you can't spot it?
The crowd craned to see.
You had an inflatable donkey.
Can you think of any reason why I should go around with an inflatable donkey?
Well, you...
One that you wouldn't mind explaining to your own dear mother?
If you're going to put it like that...
It's easy, said Al Jibbler. There's a secret compartment in the minaret, must be.
No, you've got it all wrong. It's just an illusion of a donkey.
Well, all right, it's a good illusion.
By now, half the people were around the donkey, and the others were clustered in the doorway of the minaret, looking for secret panels.
I think Al and Betty, this is where we walk away, said Lord Veterinari, behind Colon.
Just down this little alley here, and when we turn that corner, we run.
What have we got to run for? Said Betty.
Because I've just picked up the magic carpet.
Vimes was already lost. Oh, there was the sun, but that was just a direction. He could feel it on the side of his face. And the camel rocked from side to side. There was no real way of judging distance except by hemorrhoids. I'm blindfolded on the back of a camel ridden by a dereg, who everyone says are the most untrustworthy people in the world, but I'm almost positive he's not going to kill me. So, he said as he rocked gently from side to side, you may as well tell me, why 71-hour Achmed?
He killed a man, said Jabbar.
And deregs object to a little thing like that?
In the man's own tent, when he had been his guest for nearly 3 days. If he had but waited an hour.
Oh, I see. Definitely bad manners. Had the man done anything to deserve it?
Nothing. Although,
yes,
the man had killed El Issa.
The dereg's tone suggested that it wasn't much of a mitigating circumstance, but that it ought to be mentioned out of completeness.
Who was she? El Issa was a village. He poisoned a well. There had been a dispute over religion, he added. One thing led to another, but even so, to break the tradition of hospitality.
Yes, I could see that's a terrible thing. Almost impolite.
The hour was important. Some things should not be done.
You're right there, at least. By mid-afternoon, Jabbar let him take off the blindfold. Wind-carved heaps of black rock stood out of the sand. Vimes thought it was the most desolate place he'd ever seen.
They say once it was green, said Jabbar, a well-watered land.
What happened?
The wind changed.
At sunset, they reached a wadi between more wind-scoured rocks, and it was only the length of the shadows deepening the shallow indentations that began to give them back an ancient shape. "They're buildings, aren't they?" said Vimes.
"There was a city here long time ago. Did you not know?"
"Why should I know?"
"Your people built it. It was called Tacticum, after a warrior of yours."
Vimes looked at the crumbled walls and fallen pillars. "He had a city named after him," he said to no one in particular. Jabbar nudged him.
"Ahmed is watching you," he said.
"I can't see him anywhere."
"Of course. Get down, and I hope we might meet again in whatever is your paradise."
"Right, right." Jabbar turned the camel round. It left much faster than it had arrived. Vimes sat on a rock for a while. There was no sound but the hissing of the wind in the rocks and the cry of some bird far away. He thought he could hear his own heart beating.
"Bingly, bingly, beep."
The disorganizer sounded worried and uncertain. Vimes sighed.
"Yes, appointment with 71-hour Ahmed, eh?"
No,
said the demon.
Clatchian fleet sighted.
Ships of the desert, eh?
Beep. Error code 746, divergent temporal instability.
Vimes shook the box. "Something wrong with you?" he demanded. "You're still giving me someone else's appointments, you idiot box."
The appointments are correct for Commander Samuel Vimes.
That's me.
Which one of you? Said the demon.
What?
Beep.
It refused to say more. Vimes considered throwing it away, but Sybil would be hurt if she found out. He thrust it back into his pocket and tried to concentrate on the scenery again. His seat might have been part of a pillar once. Vimes saw other pieces some way away, and then realized that a heap of apparent rubble was a fallen wall. He followed this, his footsteps echoing off the cliffs, and realized that he was walking between old buildings, or where buildings had been. Here was the wreck of some stairs, there a stump of a pillar. One was a little higher than the others. He pulled himself up and found, on its flat top, two huge feet. A statue must have stood here. It probably stood, if Vimes knew anything about statues, in some kind of noble attitude. Now it had gone, and there were just feet, broken off at the ankles. They weren't exceptionally noble. As he lowered himself again, he saw, protected because this side was out of the wind, some lettering carved deeply into the plinth. He tried to make it out in the fading light. Ab hoc possum videre domum tuum. Well, domum tuum was your house, wasn't it? And videre was I see. What? He said aloud. I can see your house from up here. What kind of a noble sentiment is that?
I believe it was meant to be a boast and a threat, Sir Samuel, said 71-hour Ahmed. Somewhat typical of Ankh-Morpork, I've always thought.
Vimes stood very still. The voice had been right behind him, and it was Ahmed's voice, but it lacked that hint of camel spit and gravel that it had possessed in Ankh-Morpork. Now it was the drawl of a gentleman.
It's the echoes here, Ahmed went on. I could be anywhere. I could have a crossbow aimed at you right now.
You won't fire it, though. We've both got too much at stake.
Oh, there is honour among thieves, is there?
I don't know, said Vimes.
Oh, well, time to see if he was dead right or just dead.
Is there honour among policemen?
Sergeant Colon's eyes went big.
Swing my weight to one side, he said.
That's how magic carpets are steered, said Lord Vetinari calmly.
Yes, but supposing I swing myself off?
We'll have a lot more room, said Betty unfeelingly. Come on, Sarge, you know how to throw your weight around.
I ain't throwing my weight anywhere, said Colon firmly.
He was lying full length on the carpet, both hands gripping it as hard as possible.
It's not natural, just a bit of broad loom between you and certain splash.
The patrician looked down.
We're not over water, Sergeant.
I know what I meant, sir. Can we slow down a bit, said Betty. The breeze is invading my privacy, if you get my drift.
Lord Vetinari sighed. We're not going very fast as it is.
I suspect this is a very old carpet. There's a frayed bit here, said Betty. Shut up, said Colin. Look, I can poke my finger right through. Shut up. Notice how it kind of wobbles when you move. Shut up. Here, look, those palm trees down there look really small. Nobby, you're scared of heights, said Colin. I know you're scared of heights. That's sexual stereotyping. No, it's not. Yes, it is. You'll be expecting me to break my ankle a lot and scream all the time. Next, it's my job to prove to you that a woman can be as good as a man. Practically identical in your case, Nobby. You've caught too much sun, that's what it is. You are not female, Nobby. Betty sniffed. That's just the sort of sexist remark I'd expect from you. Well, you're not. It's the principle of the thing. Well, at least we now have transport, said Lord Vetinari, his tone suggesting that the show was over. Unfortunately, I had no time to find out where the army is. Ah, I can help you there, sir. Colon tried to salute and then made a grab for the carpet again. I found out by cunning, sir.
Really?
Yes, sir. It's at a place called, En Al Sams Hla Lesa, sir.
The carpet drifted onwards for a moment in silence.
The place where the sun shineth not, said the patrician.
There was more silence. Colon was trying not to look at anyone.
Is there a somewhere called Gebra, said Nobby sulkily.
Yes, Betty, Corporal, there is.
They've gone there. Of course, you've only got a woman's word for it.
Well done, Corporal. We shall head up the coast.
Lord Vetinari relaxed. In a busy and complex life, he'd never met people quite like Nobby and Colon. They talked all the time, yet there was something almost restful about them. He watched the dusty horizon carefully as the ancient carpet curved around. Under his arm was the metal cylinder Leonard had made for him. Drastic times required drastic measures.
Sir, said Colon, his voice muffled by the carpet.
Yes, Sergeant.
I've got to know, how did you, get that donkey down?
Persuasion, Sergeant.
What? Just talking?
Yes, Sergeant, persuasion. And admittedly a sharp stick.
Ah, I knew.
The trick of getting donkeys down from minarets, said the patrician, as the desert unwound below them, is always to find that part of the donkey which seriously wishes to get down.
The wind had settled. The bird up on the cliffs had shut down for the night. All Vimes could hear was the sizzle of the little desert creatures. Then Ahmed's voice said,
I am genuinely impressed, Sir Samuel.
Vimes took a deep breath.
You know, you really fooled me, he said. May your loins be full of fruit. That was a good one. I really thought you were just...
He stopped. But Ahmed continued.
Just another camel driver with a towel on his head. Oh, dear. And you've been doing so well up to now, Sir Samuel. The prince was very impressed. Oh, come on. You were all but making suggestive comments about melons. What was I supposed to think? Don't fret, Sir Samuel. I consider it all a compliment. You can turn round. I wouldn't dream of harming you unless you do something foolish.
Vimes turned. He could just make out a shape in the afterglow.
You were admiring this place, said Ahmed. Tacticus's men had it built when he tried to conquer Klatch. It's not really a city by today's standards, of course. It was really just making a point. Here we are and here we stay, as it were. And then the wind changed. You murdered Snowy Slopes, didn't you? The term is executed. I can show you the confession he signed beforehand. Of his own free will, more or less.
What?
Let us say I pointed out to him the alternatives to signing the confession. I was kind enough to leave you the pad. After all, I wanted to keep your interest. And don't look like that, Sir Samuel. I need you.
How can you tell how I look?
I can guess. The Assassin's Guild had a contract on him in any case, and by a happy chance, I am a guild member.
You?
Vimes tried to bite down on the word, and then, why not him? Kids got sent 1,000 miles to be taught in the Assassin's Guild school.
Oh, yes, the best years of my life, they tell me. I was in Viper House. Up school, right up school.
He sighed like a prince and spat like a camel driver.
If I shut my eyes, I can still recall the taste of that peculiar custard we used to get on Mondays. Dear me, how it all comes back. I remember every soggy street. Does Mr. Dibbler still sell his horrible sausages in a bun in Treacle Mine Road? Yes. Still the same old Dibbler, eh? Still the same sausages. Once tasted, never forgotten. True. No, don't move too quickly, Sir Samuel. Otherwise I'm afraid I shall be cutting your own throat. You don't trust me, and I don't trust you. Why did you drag me here? Drag you? I had to sabotage my own ship so you wouldn't lose me. Yes, but you knew how I'd react. Vimes's heart began to sink. Everyone knew how Sam Vimes would react. Yes. Would you like a cigarette, Sir Samuel? I thought you sucked those damn clothes. In Ankh-Morpork, yes. Always be a little bit foreign wherever you are, because everyone knows foreigners are a little bit stupid. Besides, these are rather good. Fresh from the desert? Yes, everyone knows Clatchian cigarettes are made from camel dung. A match flared, and for a moment Vimes caught a glimpse of the hooked nose as Ahmed lit a cigarette for him. That is one area where I regret to say prejudice has some evidence on its side. No, these are all the way from Sumtri, an island where it is said the women have no souls. Personally, I doubt it. Vimes could make out a hand holding the packet. Just for a moment he wondered if he could grab and... How is your luck? Said Ahmed. Running out, I suspect. Yes, a man should know the length of his luck. Shall I tell you how I know you are a good man, Sir Samuel? In the light of the rising moon, Vimes saw Ahmed produce a cigarette holder, insert one and light up almost fastidiously. Do tell. After the attempt on the prince's life, I suspected everyone. But you suspected only your own people. You couldn't bring yourself to think the Clatchians might have done it, because that had lined you up with the likes of Sergeant Colan and all the rest of the Clatchian fags are made of camel dung brigade. Whose policeman are you? I draw my pay, let us say, as the Wali of Prince Kadram. I shouldn't think he's very happy with you right now, then. You were supposed to be guarding his brother, weren't you? So was I, Vimes thought. But what the hell? Yes, and we thought the same way, Sir Samuel. You thought it was your people, I thought it was mine. The difference is, I was right. Kufura's death was plotted in Clatch. Oh, really? That's what they wanted the watch to think. No, Sir Samuel, the important thing is what someone wanted you to think. Really? Well, you've got that wrong. All the stuff with the glass and the sand on the floor. I saw through that straight away. His voice faded into silence. After a while, Ahmed said, almost sympathetically, Yes, you did. Damn. Oh, in some ways you were right. Ossie was paid in dollars originally, and then later on someone broke in, making sure they dumped most of the glass outside and swapped the money and distributed the sand. I must say that I thought the sand was going a bit too far, too. No one would be that stupid. But they wanted to make sure it looked like a bungled attempt. Who was it? Said Vimes. Oh, a small-time thief. Bob Hard Yo-Yo. He didn't even know why he was doing it, except that someone was willing to pay him. I commend your city, Commander. For enough money, you can find someone to do anything. Someone must have paid him. A man he met in a pub. Vimes nodded glumly. It was amazing how many people were prepared to do business with a man they'd met in a pub. I can believe that, he said. You see, if even the redoubtable Commander Vimes, who is known even to some senior Clatchian politicians as an unbendingly honest and thorough man, if somewhat lacking in intelligence, if even he protested that it was done by his own people, well, the world is watching. The world would soon find out. Starting a war over a rock? Well, that sort of thing makes countries uneasy. They've all got rocks off their coast. But starting a war because some foreign dog had killed a man on a mission of peace?
That, I think, the world will understand. Lacking in intelligence, said Vimes.
Oh, don't be too depressed, Commander. That business with the fire at the embassy, that was sheer bravery.
It was bloody terror. Well, the dividing line is narrow. That was one thing I hadn't expected.
In the rolling, clicking snooker table of Vimes's mind, the black ball hit a pocket.
You had expected the fire, then?
The building should have been almost empty.
Vimes moved. Ahmed was lifted off his feet and slammed against a pillar with both of Vimes's hands around his neck.
The woman was trapped in there.
It was necessary, said Ahmed hoarsely. There had to be a diversion. His life was in danger. I had to get him out. I did not know about the woman until too late. I give you my word.
Through the red veil of anger, Vimes became aware of a prickle in the region of his stomach. He glanced down at the knife that had appeared magically in the other man's hand.
Listen to me,
hissed Ahmed.
Prince Kadram ordered his brother's death. What better way to demonstrate the perfidy of the sausage eaters, killing a peacemaker?
His own brother? You expect me to believe that? Messages were sent to the embassy in code.
To the old ambassador?
Well, I don't believe that.
Ahmed stood quite still for a moment.
No, you really don't, do you? He said. Be generous, Sir Samuel. Truly treat all men equally. Allow Clatchians the right to be scheming bastards, In fact, the ambassador is just a pompous idiot. Ankh Morpork has no monopoly on them.
But his deputy sees the messages first. He is a young man of ambition.
Vimes relaxed his grip.
Him? I thought he was shifty as soon as I saw him. I suspect that you thought he was Clatchian as soon as you saw him.
But I take your point.
And you could read this code, could you?
Oh, come now. Don't you read Vetinari's paperwork upside down when you're standing in front of his desk?
Besides, I am Prince Kadram's policeman. So he's your boss, right?
Who is your boss, Sir Samuel, when push comes to shove?
The two men stood locked together. Ahmed's breath wheezed. Vimes stood back.
These messages, you've got them?
Oh, yes, with his seal on them.
Ahmed rubbed his neck.
Good grief, the originals? I'd have thought they'd be under lock and key.
They were, in the embassy.
But in the fire, many hands were needed to carry important documents to safety. It was a very useful fire.
A death warrant for his own brother.
Well, you can't argue against that in court.
What court? The king is the law.
Ahmed sat down.
We are not like you. You kill kings.
The word is execute, and we only did it once, and that was a long time ago, said Vimes.
Is that why you brought me here? Why all this drama? You could have come to see me in Ankh Morpork.
You're a suspicious man, Commander. Would you have believed me?
Besides, I had to get Prince Kufura out of there before he died of his wounds.
Where's the prince now?
Close and safe. He is safer in the desert than he would ever be in Ankh Morpork, I can assure you.
And well?
Getting better. He is being looked after by an old lady whom I trust.
Your mother?
Gods, no. My mother is a dreg. She'd be terribly offended if I trusted her. She'd say she had brought me upright.
He saw Vimes's expression this time.
You think I am an educated barbarian?
Let's just say I'd have given Snowy Slopes a running start.
Really?
Look around you, Sir Samuel. Your beat is a city you can walk across in half an hour. Mine is 2 million square miles of desert and mountain. My companions are a sword and a camel, and frankly, neither are good conversationalists, believe me. Oh, the towns and cities have their guards, of a sort. They are uncomplicated thinkers, but it is my job to go into the waste places and chase bandits and murderers 500 miles from anyone who would be on my side. So I must inspire dread and strike the first blow, because I will not have a chance to strike a second one. I am an honest man of a sort, I think. I survived 7 years in an Ankh Morpork public school, patronized by the Sons of Gentlemen. Compared to that, life among the dregs holds no terrors, I assure you.
and I administer justice swiftly and inexpensively.
Thank you.